We have finished one section of the first canto, which was chapters, or the second half of chapter 7 till the end of chapter 11. And in essence, that chapter gave us a glimpse, a wonderful glimpse, of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In essence, those chapters introduced us to Krishna's dealings with his devotees and how his devotees view him and why Krishna deals with different devotees in different ways. Basically, the devotees have no desire in their hearts other than to please Krishna. That is what it means to be a devotee. Anya vilasita sanyam jnana kama anavrita anukulena krishna anushilam bhakta uttama. That is pure devotional service. And how does Krishna reciprocate? How does the Supreme Lord reciprocate with one whose only desire is to please him? He reciprocates fully, even up to the level of giving himself to such a devotee. Completely. Even he becomes completely under a devotee's control who loves him to the highest degree. Even Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, finds himself incapable of reciprocating equally on an equal level, properly, with the most exalted devotees, such as the gopis, who gave up everything in his service to please him, and such as Sudama, who only gave Krishna some chipped rice, but it was given with such devotion that Krishna found himself incapable to reciprocate with him on par, equally. Now, the topic in the 12th chapter changes, but we're not going to read the 12th chapter right now. The 12th chapter deals with what? The birth of Prakrit Maharaj. But we're going to read that chapter a bit later when we hear about the activities of Prithu Maharaj, which will be 16 and 17, and it fits in very well with that. So to keep the continuity, we will read about it then. In the time sequence, the actual time sequence, it belongs just where it is. But in this continuity of the story, we will hear about the birth of Maharaj Prakrit in conjunction with his activities, and finally his renunciation and sitting on the bank of the Ganges to fast, awaiting his death. But now, after the birth of Maharaj Prakrit, after Krishna has left Hastinapur, left Hastinapur after the battle of Kurukshetra, and Krishna has entered Dwarka, we will now, to prepare us for the 13th chapter, go back still further in time. And that further was before the battle of Kurukshetra, when the intrigues were taking place in Hastinapur. Sankirtan, you turn that down a bit. The intrigues were taking place in Hastinapur. And in the presence, in the palace of Hastinapur, where Dhritarashtra was acting as king, once he asked Vidura how he should deal with the Pandavas. And Vidura answered very bluntly. He said, the problem that we are facing here, maybe a little more than that, The problem that we're facing here is that you are listening to this snake, this Duryodhana, and he said this in the presence of Duryodhana. You are taking his advice, but he is envious of the Pandavas, and not only that, he is envious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Duryodhana heard this, he became very, very angry and spoke very harshly to Vidura. Vidura was actually Yamaraj, as we will in the purports of the 13th chapter is described, who had been cursed by Mandaka Muni to take his birth as a Sudra. So he was born from Srila Vyasadeva with a Sudrani at the same times when Dhritarashtra and Pandu were born. So his birth was not on the royal caliber. And yet the system was, he was being maintained in the household as if royalty, but he was actually not royalty, having been born from the womb of a Sudrani. So Duryodhana pointed to this very sensitive fact. And he said, look who is speaking here. This low-class person is criticizing. Look at his birth. Look at his birth. And we are maintaining him. He's eating our food, the food that we are giving him by our kindness. And yet he dares criticize us. So when Vidura heard this, two things happened. One external and one internal. And we may, if we examine how we react to things, if we are fortunate and if we have been paying very close attention to some of the philosophy and if we are able to apply it, we will also note within ourselves possibly two different reactions to an event, an unfortunate event. So Vidura immediately took this as the greatest insult. In the assembly, because an insult is magnified when it is done publicly, it causes much more pain to the heart. So Vidura felt this insult like an arrow piercing in his heart, and he immediately decided, I shall not depend on these people anymore. I am leaving. So he took his bow, which as a member of the dynasty he had used on many occasions, he took that bow and walked to the door and placed that bow by the door and walked out. Now where was he going to be maintained from now on? Where? Duryodhana had said, this person who we're maintaining isn't grateful enough to support us. Rather, he criticizes us. He walks out. Who is going to maintain him? But along with this feeling of being insulted, another understanding also came to Vidura. And that understanding was that this was Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's hand is in this. And Krishna is being very kind to me through this, on one level, unfortunate, insulting circumstance. This is Krishna's desire. He recognized Krishna's hand and left and did not turn back. He understood that Krishna is going to maintain me. And this understanding will come up very deeply in his preaching in the 13th chapter. Because before one can preach powerfully enough, like like Vidura preached, and we will hear about this, powerfully enough to change someone's heart and affect their lives, make them take a direction that's completely opposite the direction they're going in. One's realization has to be very deep. I heard Prabhupada saying this, not in those words, but he was speaking to some of the devotees in India. And one of the devotees said, Prabhupada was speaking very encouragingly about some type of preaching that was going on. And one of the devotees said, I know what these people are like. The young people, well, they'll become interested, but they'll never join. And Prabhupada's reply was, you could not make them join. Not that they would not, they could never join. Because your potency was less. Don't blame them. So that is the point. His realization was deep, and therefore his words so deeply touched the heart. But that's getting ahead of the story. So Vidura left. And how did he maintain himself? What did he do? He went on pilgrimage. He was a yatri. He went from one place to the next, to the next, to the next. Why? Because he wanted to purify himself. He had been party to so many political intrigues. He had taken the grains, the food, as Duryodhana said, that had to maintain himself. He wanted to purify himself, and he went on pilgrimage, and he didn't come back in 3 days or 7 days or 1 week or 1 month or 6 months or 1 year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. He put his bow at the door, and he left, planning on never returning. He wandered for many, many, many years, and during that time, the battle of Kurukshetra took place. And during that time, still further years passed after Krishna returned to Dwarka. And years and years and years passed. 25, perhaps 30 years passed. And he wandered on his pilgrimage to the place known as Prabhas, Prabhachetra. And this had happened just after Krishna had left. He appeared there. He got there just after Krishna had left this planet. Just after Krishna and all the Yadu members of the Yadu dynasty had departed. So he knew this. And he who loved Krishna, who was a deep devotee of Krishna, continued his pilgrimage. And he headed north centrally. And he arrived at on the bank of the Ganga, or at Gurgaon, it describes in the third canto. And there he met Uddhav, the dearest devotee of Krishna. He had been wandering, Vidura had been wandering for 30 years, and he came across one of the dearest devotees of Krishna, and he was ecstatic. He questioned Uddhava, how are the members, your family members, the Vrishnis, the Yadus, because Uddhava was a Dwarka devotee. And when Uddhava heard this question, he went into transcendental ecstasy of separation from Krishna. Because, I'll tell you why, how Uddhava got to that place in Gurgaon. We heard how Vidura got there. But Uddhava's situation was quite different. He was with Krishna in Dwarka for many, many, many years. As Krishna's very intimate friend, cousin, intimate friend, so intimate that Krishna had sent Uddhava to Vrindavan with a message for the gopis and also to learn about the depth of the gopis' love for Krishna. So intimate was this Uddhava. So once, as described in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, the young members of the Yadu dynasty, the sons of Krishna, they wanted to play a trick on some sages who were nearby. This is described in the first chapter of the 11th canto. And Samba, the son of Krishna and Dambavati, he put a sari on because he was very, very, very beautiful. He was a real mother's boy. And he placed something in his belly and said, and all the other members of the Yadu, the other boys came and said, "Oh, this young girl, she is going to have a child soon. What will she give birth to? A boy or a girl?" So they were tricking the sages, or attempting to trick the sages, but including Narada Muni, very powerful sages. And the sages said, "She will give birth to something that will be the end of your dynasty, an iron club." And they looked, and they saw indeed whatever was under the sari had turned into an iron club. And they didn't know what to do, so they immediately went to Dwarka. And without telling Lord Krishna, they approached the king, the head of the Dwarka dynasty, the dynasty Ugrasena. He said, "Explain to him what had happened. What should we do?" And he said, "Don't worry, boys. I'll take care of it." So he ground that club up into powder. And when you're grinding something, there has to be something left at the end that you're holding on to. So that piece of iron, along with all the iron powder, they threw it into the ocean, where it landed, it landed at Prabhas, and those iron filings turned into cane. Like sugar cane, but more like iron cane. That was very hard. And that iron filing, the iron piece, got eaten by a fish. And that fish was caught and sold to a hunter whose name was Jara. And that hunter ended up taking that piece of iron and fashioning it into an arrow. At the head of an arrow. So, the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, went to see Krishna in Dwarka. And they wanted to see the wonderful place that Krishna had designed by his own desire. So they went to Dwarka, specifically to tell Krishna something very grave also. And that was, the battle of Kurukshetra was over. And the reason for which they had called Krishna to this world, because they were aware only of their own level. Because everyone naturally is aware of their own level of going on. But Krishna is doing many things at once. And therefore, one can never know what Krishna is planning. So therefore one, a devotee, accepts everything as Krishna's mercy. So the demigod said, "The burden of the earth, Pritranaya Sadvanam Vinashaya Chidaskritam, has been removed. The purpose of your advent has been fulfilled. Now, O Lord, if you so desire, you can leave this world, you can depart." And Krishna said, "I already understand this fact. And therefore, I have planted the seed for my own removal from leaving this world, as well as the removal of the Yadu dynasty. And then, after the demigods left, there began to appear very inauspicious signs in Dwarka, earth trembling and perhaps stars and this and that. And Krishna brought these to the attention of the members of the Yadu dynasty, the heads of the Yadu dynasty, and said, "These are inauspicious. We must do something to counteract it. Let us go to Prabhas." But Uddhava was very, very intelligent. Indeed, he was the student of Brihaspati, and everyone would ask Uddhava for advice to actually understand what was going on. So Uddhava approached Krishna privately, just alone, and said, "My dear Lord, I can understand that now you are about to wind up your pastimes and leave this world. I have one request. Please don't leave me here without you. Take me with you." And Krishna then began instructing Uddhava. Very long instructions. From the 7th chapter of the 11th canto up to the 29th chapter. And these instructions are called the Uddhava Gita, where Krishna speaks to Uddhava, ultimately about bhakti. And after these instructions were concluded, because Uddhava was thinking, "How can I possibly stay in this world without you?" Yes, when we look at it in a slightly different way, as we've been speaking of, and also as comes out in the second canto, how can anyone stay in this world without Krishna? How could the world exist without Krishna? Everything comes from Krishna. Abhina tvam. Nothing ultimately is different from Krishna. Bhumir nalo vayu. Yes, someone help. Kamano buddha evacha ahankara. Bina prakriti mastada. Everything is Krishna's prakriti. There is nothing different from Krishna. How can anything exist separately from Krishna? So Krishna taught Uddhava how to see him with a heart filled with bhakti in everything. And this is the key of renunciation. Actually, this is the key of renunciation. To renounce every other vision except seeing Krishna everywhere, and in everything. So then Krishna told Uddhava, "I have a mission for you. I want you to go to Bhadarikashram." And I've completed everything I had desired on earth, but I haven't seen the great sages who stay in Bhadarikashram, and this mission I'm giving to you. So you please give them, tell them of my instructions to you. So Uddhava, accepting Krishna's desire, took his slippers and placed them upon his head, circumambulated Krishna, and then started for Bhadarikashram. As he was leaving, which direction did he have to go in? North and northeast, yes. As he was leaving, he heard that the Yadu dynasty and Krishna himself and Balaram had indeed gone to Prabhachetra. So instead of directly following Krishna's instructions, he immediately went to Prabhachetra himself. And he arrived there, and he saw that the entire Yadu dynasty had been finished. Khatam ho gaya. Finished. And Balaram, was no longer in this world. And this part of the Bhagavatam in chapters 30 and 31 is very, very, very touching. Very, very touching. But Uddhava arrived there and he saw that Krishna, in a forearm form, was sitting beneath a young aswatha tree, preparing to leave this world. And this is described in what canto? 11th canto, but not really in the 11th. What canto? The 3rd canto. And Uddhava had saw Krishna there, and he asked Krishna to explain to him that same knowledge that Krishna had previously described to Lord Brahma, meaning the Shataslokhi Bhagavatam. And after describing that, and while he was describing that, Maitreya Muni came and heard this as well. Maitreya Muni first was an impersonalist, not a Mayavadi, an impersonalist. But after hearing Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, he became a devotee because he heard that the actual goal was Vaikuntha, prema bhakti, and the spiritual world. So Uddhava left, and Maitreya Muni left. Krishna told them to go, and Uddhava had to go to Bhadarikashram to follow Krishna's order. And then Krishna called Daruka, who was wandering around madly practically because he was feeling so much separation from Krishna. And Daruka came and Krishna gave him one last instruction. Go to Dwarka, tell Arjuna to take my queens. Arjuna was in Dwarka in that time. This is important because we'll hear about this in the next chapter. Tell Arjuna to bring my queens and some of my intimate relatives back to Hastinapur very quickly, because in a few days the sea is going to completely inundate Dwarka. So you go immediately, he told Daruka. At that time, the hunter came, Jara, and he thought he saw a deer. And with that very arrow, the Yadu dynasty, by the way, if one reads in the 11th canto, had killed themselves with those canes grown from the filings. And the arrowhead went into Krishna's lotus feet, or it appeared to. So anyway, all these incredible pastimes took place, and Krishna left his visarupa, the material manifestation here, and he himself departed up. And all the demigods were crowded in the sky, just like when there's a great person leaving a place. All people who want, they try to catch his attention. Look over here, I want you to do this. Come to my house. So all the demigods were in the sky as Krishna was leaving this planet, trying to get Krishna to go to their abode, their planet, on his way to the spiritual world. And actually, Krishna had told Brahma, I will briefly visit Brahmaloka on the way out. So he actually did that. But Krishna departed from this world, and Uddhava knew that Krishna had departed from this world. And Uddhava knew that the Yadu dynasty was finished. And he was heading towards Bhadarikashram. And at the exact same time that he was in north of Delhi, north of Hastinapur, in Gurgaon, Vidura reached that very same spot. By whose arrangement? Yes, by Krishna's arrangement. Then Vidura asked so many questions to Uddhava, and Uddhava remembered when he asked how are the members of the Yadu dynasty, and ultimately asked how is Krishna. And this is described in the third canto. Uddhava went into ecstasy and was associating with Krishna in Aprakat Lila by his deep loving remembrance of Krishna. And then he explained to Vidura that everyone has left. The sun has set. The sun of Krishna has set from this world. So, at one point, when Uddhava was explaining to Vidura what had happened, he told Vidura that Krishna had remembered him, because Krishna had told Maitreya to instruct Vidura about the Chatusloki Bhagavatam, which he had heard while Krishna was instructing Uddhava. So when Vidura heard that, he became so ecstatic and tearful, thinking that Krishna had remembered him of all people just before departing from this world. And then the next day after meeting Uddhava, they spent all night discussing Krishna Katha, and then the next day, because he was meant to hear this information from Maitreya Muni and Vidura, because there was a matter of etiquette, because Vidura was older, so much older, senior to him. So he left for Haridwar, where Maitreya Muni was sitting. So when he arrived there, he asked Maitreya Muni so many questions. And the entirety of the third canto and the fourth canto is the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya Muni. And in the fourth canto, Vidura heard how Dhruva, at the end of his life, renounced everything. And then he heard how Prithu Maharaj, at the end of his life, had renounced everything. And then he heard about Prachini Barhishat, who was a materialist by the association of Narada Muni, gave up his performance of Karmakanda sacrifices and renounced everything. And how the Prachetas, at the end of their life, had renounced everything. And when he had heard all this, he remembered his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, half-brother Dhritarashtra, and how he was just sitting in the kingdom after the battle of Kurukshetra, being maintained by the very people he had tried to kill. And he decided that he was going to save Dhritarashtra's spiritual life. And therefore, now we'll begin the class. Chapter 13. Suta Goswami was describing. So he traveled, he was in Haridwar, and then he went from there, because he was, how far is Haridwar from Hastinapur, Delhi? Maybe 125 kilometers or so? 5 hours drive. How many? One night train? That's not, how do you measure kilometers? Yeah, how far? I think it's also 120. Not that far. So he went immediately to Hastinapur after hearing these instructions from Maitreya Muni that Krishna specifically wanted him to hear. So therefore, the first verse says, while traveling on a pilgrimage, Vidura received knowledge of the destination of the self from the great sage Maitreya, and then returned to Hastinapur. He became as well-versed in the subject as he desired. After asking various questions and becoming established in the transcendental loving service of Lord Krishna, Vidura retired from putting questions to Maitreya Muni. So Vidura entered the palace in Hastinapur where Yudhisthira was ruling. He had been ruling for about 30 years or so after the battle of Kurukshetra had established him. And they hadn't seen him because Vidura had left years before that, and he was so beloved of the Pandavas. He had protected Vidura the elder, always tried to advise Dhritarashtra about the proper way to act and how to properly protect the Pandavas and to not listen to Duryodhana. And this beloved member of the Kuru dynasty now re-entered Hastinapur. And all the inhabitants, after 30 years, no one had heard of him. He was wandering completely incognito. And all the inhabitants, Maharaj Yudhisthira, his younger brothers, Dhritarashtra was still there, Satyaki, Sanjay, Kripacharya, Kunti, Gandhari, Draupadi, Subhadra, Uttara, Kripi, many other wives of the Kauravas and other ladies with children, they all hurried to him in great delight. It so appeared they had regained their consciousness after a long period of being dead. They had come back to life because their affection for Vidura was so great. With great delight, they all approached him as if life had returned to their bodies. They exchanged obeisances. They welcomed each other with embraces. Due to anxieties and a long separation, they all cried out of affection. Yudhisthira then arranged to offer sitting accommodations and a reception. So immediately, before asking so many, they hadn't seen this beloved Vidura, family member, protector for 30 years, but before asking him so many questions, where have you been? What have you been doing? Do you know this had happened? Do you know that had happened? Before all these exchanges, they first fed him, because he had been wandering for so long. They offered him a nice place to rest. They seated him comfortably, and Prabhupada's purport here to text 7 explains about Vedic reception, how important this is. Atithi Bhagwan, a guest, especially a guest who just comes unexpectedly, is treated as sent directly by Bhagawan, by God, by Krishna. And he's treated so carefully as representative of God, as God, like that. Not like in the West, especially in the big cities in the West, they have a little keyhole so you can, someone knocks on the door and first you see someone's eye staring at you. And then if you're acceptable, that's after the dogs, if you can stop the dogs from barking. And then the eye, and then if they're going to open the door, then about 15 locks open. Because we've made so much advancement in modern civilization, and everyone is now free from all fear due to our great advancement. But in the Vedic culture, people would wander, they would be given a place to rest, taken care of. Please tell us where you've been. What can we learn from you, especially sadhus? Because all this is really, this type of welcome is to make a sadhu feel so ingratiated, so grateful, because the householders invited him into his house. He shared what he has, the material wealth, the material facility that he has. But the sadhu, he doesn't have that material facility. But he has something else, more valuable. He's gathered jewels and gems of spiritual realization and spiritual knowledge. And this reciprocation, material facility given with an open heart, made the sadhu want to share that jewels from within his heart naturally. So Prabhupada's purport explained this reception. And then Yudhisthira began to speak. He said, "My uncle, Vidura, the brother of my father, Pandu, do you remember how you always protected us along with our mother from all sorts of calamities?" This again is the content of much of the Mahabharata. And we heard Kunti Devi say, and Bhishma Dev say, how Krishna had protected the Pandavas from the most difficult circumstances. They were always in difficulty. Why? Because of Duryodhana's enmity, because he wanted to be the king. And how Dhritarashtra had always supported Duryodhana, even though the Pandavas were rightly to be the kings. So these calamities took place one after the next for the Pandavas, and Vidura was always there to help. He always protected the righteous Yudhisthira and the Pandavas. Your partiality, like the wings of a bird, saved us from poisoning and arson, especially arson, the fire, the house of lack was a trap, and Vidura specifically gave them, the Pandavas, the clues to protect their lives. And then he asked, Yudhisthira asked, "While traveling on the surface of the earth, how did you maintain your livelihood? How did you eat?" That's always, how is it possible for someone to be wandering around? Because when you're at home, you work so hard for your food and your shelter. And your whole life is spent just to get the necessities of life. And here this person has been wandering homeless with no money, no shelter, no anything. For 30 years, and he comes back and he's healthy, he's happy, no anxiety, fully free. So the question, how did you possibly maintain yourself the whole time? What was your livelihood? At which holy places and pilgrimage sites did you render service? Where did you go? What did you see? What seva did you do? And then a very wonderful verse Yudhisthira spoke. Famous, wonderful. And Prabhupada's purport is also extremely wonderful and very important.
Bhavadvida bhagavatas tirtha bhuta sayam vibhu tirtha korvanti tirthani svantasthena gadabrita.
Bhavadvida bhagavata, devotees, bhagavat. Devotees like your good self, Tirtha Bhuta Swayambhu. You are actually places of pilgrimage. Even though you've been traveling to places of pilgrimage, you are actually a place of pilgrimage. You are actually a holy place with two legs. Like Advaitacharya told Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu, after taking sannyas, was going to Vrindavan. He was wandering to Vrindavan. But they tricked him, Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita, because they wanted to bring him back because all the residents of Navadvipa were so brokenhearted. Yes? They couldn't, because Mahaprabhu had left without telling them. Why did he leave without telling them? Why did he leave to take sannyas without telling them? They would have definitely stopped. They would have begged him, they would have cried, they would have used every trick. And the ghat where Mahaprabhu left to take sannyas, to go to Katwa, is called what? Nirdaya. Merciless. They would have done anything. Couldn't have tolerated it. So when they brought him back, and Mahaprabhu said, "I wanted to go to Vrindavan." And Advaita Acharya Prabhu said, "Everywhere you are is Vrindavan, because you have Vrindavan consciousness. This is the art." So, Tirtha Bhuta Swayamvibhu, you are a walking pilgrimage place, a walking holy place, because you have captured Krishna in your heart. And we have personally experienced this with Srila Prabhupada. Otherwise, it was impossible for him to do what he had done. I was listening to Prabhupada speak to some lawyers in Australia who the devotees had stolen some flowers or something in there from a nursery in their youthful exuberance to serve Krishna. And some lawyers had helped the devotees. So Prabhupada was speaking to them. And Prabhupada told them that everything belongs to Krishna. Imagine telling these lawyers. So the devotees actually didn't do anything wrong at all. They had stolen flowers from some nursery. And Prabhupada was so bold and speaking to them. But they didn't get insulted. They didn't think, well, you've anything bad. It's the most amazing conversation. He never conceded to them at all that the devotees even did anything a little bit wrong. But he charmed them so sweetly, but yet spoke so directly and philosophically, they couldn't disagree with him even. But it wasn't just his logic or his faith. It was that he had a potency to charm everyone due to the fact that he had Krishna in his heart and he attracted everyone. And they were saying, yes, we agree with you completely. Yes, we agree with you completely. This is not ordinary. Because he was a walking Tirthasthan. Because you carry the Tirtha Korvanti Tirthanis. Why? Svantasthena. Gada Britaha. Gada, the one who carries the gada, the club, you are carrying him in your heart. So therefore, what makes a place a holy place? Because God is there. So you are a walking holy place because you are carrying Krishna in your heart always. And what causes someone to carry Krishna in his heart? What causes Krishna to come into someone's heart, rather. And purity, too. Purity and great desire. Purity means the absence of impureness. But that's not enough to get Krishna in your heart. It takes also bhakti, prema bhakti, really. Liberation comes, freedom from matter comes from the absence of matter in the heart. But Krishna, that's something else. That comes from bhakti, prema bhakti. This is actually the meaning of the third sloka of the Chatusloka Bhagavatam. Yata mahanta bhutani bhute suches. Pravastani pravastani mamateshu nateshvaham. So, listen to Prabhupada's purport. Because this topic has come up quite a few times, and it came up just before. This is what Krishna was telling Uddhava. The personality of Godhead is omnipresent, Prabhupada says, by his diverse potencies everywhere. By his energy, he is everywhere. Just as the power of electricity is distributed everywhere within space. Similarly, the Lord's omnipresence, the fact that he is everywhere, is perceived and manifested by his unalloyed devotees like Vidur, just as electricity is manifested in an electric bulb. So Krishna is everywhere, but I am so unfortunate that I just see matter everywhere. Again, I see my own mind with its own desires everywhere. What I'm seeing is basically a projection of my own mind. So when I'm angry, it's my mind. When I'm glad, there's something that gratifies something in my mind. When I'm disturbed, something in me is disturbing. A psychological principle, actually, called projection. And it's very interesting if you accept this principle, you just watch it. You watch it in action. You see what really disturbs you. Something will happen during the day. Something oh, that really, this, someone would say something, or a particular type of person. And you see, if the thing that doesn't that disturbs you isn't a great fault in your own character, the thing that disturbs, just see. This is my experience, that yes, when we point the finger, so much, the three fingers point towards us. So, when there is devotion, deep devotion in the heart, rather than seeing one's own mind everywhere, one will see Krishna. Because this is reality. That is actually reality. So electricity may be everywhere, but it takes a bulb, a certain mechanism to manifest it. So similarly, a pure devotee like Vidura always feels the presence of the Lord everywhere because he is a pure devotee. His consciousness is pure, it is clean, and he has devotion for Krishna. So therefore he sees Krishna everywhere. There is not a place where he doesn't see him. Stavaram jagamam deki na deki taramoti savatrahoya nija ishta devasporti. He sees everything as a manifestation of his Ishtadev, his worshipable Lord. If our mind is our worshipable Lord, that's what we'll see everywhere also. But if Krishna is our worshipful Lord with full worship, then we will see Krishna. So Vidura was like that. So a pure devotee like Vidura always feels the presence of the Lord everywhere. He sees everything in the potency of the Lord, and the Lord in everything. This is wonderful. The holy places all over the earth are meant for purifying the polluted consciousness of the human beings. How? How do they purify? By an atmosphere surcharged with the presence of the Lord's unalloyed devotees. That was Prabhupada's trick. That is Vidura's trick. They go somewhere and they turn 26 Second Avenue into Vaikuntha. Raise your hand if you've been to 26 Second Avenue. It is not the spiritual world. The streets are filthy, the traffic, the criminals, the this, the that, horrible city, the smog, but in Prabhupada's association, it was. It's surcharged with his consciousness. Because every dealing we have is an exchange of consciousness. So he exchanged, that was the preaching, an exchange of consciousness. If anyone visits a holy place, he must search out the pure devotees residing in such a holy place. Take lessons for them. Try to apply such instructions in practical life. And thus gradually prepare oneself for the ultimate salvation, going back to Godhead. To go to some holy place of pilgrimage does not mean only to take a bath in the Ganges or Jamuna, or to visit the temples situated in those places. One should also find representatives of Vidura who have no desire in life save and except to serve the personality of Godhead. So if anyone wants to become like Vidura and have that potency to manifest Krishna wherever they are, sometimes it's very attractive, that thought, I shall become a holy person. It's not difficult. And Katvanga Maharaj in the second canto proved that it can be done in a half of a moment. But yet the price is high. It is everything. All that one has to do, but it's simple, is have no desire in life save and except to serve the personality of Godhead. And that is called Sharanagati. Go tripte varanam data. Surrender. Return to our actual position of being Krishna's servant. our actual and natural position, jivera srupoi, krishner nityadas. The personality of Godhead is always with such pure devotees because of their unalloyed service. He stays with them because they stay with him. Which is without, their service is without any tinge of fruit of action or utopian speculation. What is utopian speculation? Fruit of action means karma. Utopian speculation means what? What is it? What is Prabhupada specifically what is utopian speculation? What is he referring to specifically? But what does it mean? But what is it specifically? Why is he using utopian speculation? We can't become God. That's the utopian speculation. Utopia means imaginary. That's, we can never become God. Sorry. Utopian, a dream. Utopian speculation. Better to accept reality that we are his servants and be his unalloyed servant. So these pure devotees are bereft of this desire and karma. Karma jnana anavrita. They are in the actual service of the Lord, specifically by the process of hearing and chanting. The pure devotees hear from the authorities and chant, sing, and write of the glories of the Lord. Mahamuni Vyasadeva heard from Narada, and then he chanted in writing, which is nice specifically because of today's presentation of our Prabhupada's sweet ecstatic purports, which were Prabhupada's chanting and writing. Sukadeva Goswami studied from his father. Who is his father? And he described it to Maharaj Prickett. That is the way of Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing and chanting. Hearing and preaching. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam. So by their actions, the pure devotees of the Lord, by this process of hearing and chanting, can render any place into a place of pilgrimage. And the holy places are worth the name only on their account. Such pure devotees are able to rectify the polluted atmosphere of any place. And what to speak of a holy place rendered unholy by the questionable actions of interested persons who try to adopt the professional life at the cost of the reputation of a holy place. My uncle, who is he speaking to? Who? Vidur. You must have visited Dwarka. You had been traveling for 30 years. You must have visited Dwarka. In that holy place are our friends and well-wishers, the descendants of Yadu, who are always wrapped in the service of Lord Sri Krishna. You might have seen them or heard about them. Are they all living happily in their abodes? So what did, when Vidura heard this question from Maharaj Yudhisthira, what did he understand? Yes. He understood that they didn't know yet that Krishna had left this world. They didn't know that all the Yadu dynasty, their beloved friends, well-wishers, had all died. That Balaram was no longer in this world. We'll read just from the last purport. The last paragraph, short paragraph of purport to 11. Maharaj Yudhisthira was also always wrapped in the thought of Lord Krishna and his associates at Dwarka. Otherwise, he could not have asked all about them from Vidura. Maharaj Yudhisthira was therefore on the same level of devotion as Vidura, although engaged in the state affairs of the kingdom of the world. Thus being questioned by Maharaj Yudhisthira, Mahatma Vidura gradually described everything he had personally experienced accept news of the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. Just see how he reacted to Yudhisthira's questioning. He didn't put up a, what is it called, the global free forum, a news to everyone, here's the bad news of the day, be happy with it. No. He was a very, very sensitive, caring individual. He knew that Yudhisthira would find this out. And he knew what would happen as soon as Yudhisthira found out that Krishna had left this world and the Yadu dynasty had departed. And he knew what would happen to Yudhisthira. What would happen? He would break apart. His heart would be shattered. Prabhupada's purport, very instructive for us. I have tested this out. It is true. Listen. According to Niti Shastra, civic laws, one should not speak an unpalatable truth to cause distress to others. Distress comes upon us in its own way by the laws of nature. So one should not aggravate it by propaganda. In other words, everyone finds out bad news somehow or another. You or me don't have to be the medium for that. They'll find out, don't worry. I've tested this out. I know something sometimes, and someone asks me, and I'll make believe I don't know, something that's sad and unpalatable. And everyone ultimately finds out all bad news anyway. Even if I don't cooperate with the news network. Prabhu, what was the instruction that Mahaprabhu gave Raghunath Das Goswami? Beginning with Gram Yakata. Bole. No, balloon. No, no, no. I want. Please. Gram Yakata no bolive. He told Raghunath Das Goswami. What does that mean? You don't even have to know Bengali. Don't speak this. There's gossip. Did you hear the latest? No, really. But I did hear this. Gramya katano bolive. And the next part? And don't hear it either. Oh, no. What will I do then? Well, distress comes upon us in its own way by the laws of nature, so one should not aggravate it by propaganda. For a compassionate soul like Vidura, especially in his dealings with the beloved Pandavas, it was almost impossible to disclose an impalatable piece of news like the annihilation of the Yadu dynasty. His heart was so had so much affection for the Pandavas. Even if he wanted to, he couldn't do it. Therefore, he purposely refrained from it. Thus, Mahatma Vidura, being treated just like a godly person by his kinsmen, so he had come back and they were treating him so wonderfully, remained there for a certain period. Why? Because he had been on a pilgrimage, living like a beggar, hadn't eaten properly and bathed properly in 30 years. So now he was coming back to the palace so he could finally sleep in a proper bed? No, not at all. He had a plan, and that plan was to rectify the mentality of his eldest brother, whose name was Dhritarashtra, and in this way bring happiness to all the others. I'm supposed to go up to text 28. I'm going to keep going until, for a little while at least, we'll see how I do. So now a little bit of, I was also supposed to read that purport. Yes, by reading this purport we'll understand just what the problem of Dhritarashtra was, in case we already don't understand it. Mahatma Vidura had already, this is starting in the second paragraph, had already adopted the renounced order of life, and therefore he did not return to his paternal palace to enjoy some material comforts. He accepted out of his own mercy what was offered to him by Maharaj Yudhisthira. But the purpose of living in the palace was to deliver his elder brother, Dhritarashtra, who was too much materially attached. Dhritarashtra lost all his state and descendants. 100 of his sons, each and every one of them, were killed by Bhim. He lost the state in the fight with Maharaj Yudhisthira. And still, due to his sense of helplessness, he did not feel ashamed to accept the charity and hospitality of Maharaj Yudhisthira. On the part of Maharaj Yudhisthira, it was quite an order to maintain his uncle in a befitting manner. So he was doing the right thing, dutifully, affectionately, taking care of Dhritarashtra. But acceptance of such magnanimous hospitality by Dhritarashtra was not at all desirable. He accepted it because he thought that he had no other alternative. He was an old man. He was helpless. He had nowhere to go. Who will feed me? Who will take care of me? Who will clothe me? Vidura particularly came to enlighten Dhritarashtra and to give him a lift to the highest status of spiritual cognition. And what realization is that? Is that you should depend upon Krishna. Who will feed you? Who will clothe you? Krishna will feed you. Krishna will clothe you. How does Vidura know? Well, he just wandered around on pilgrimage for 30 years and Krishna was feeding him. Krishna was clothing him. It is the duty of enlightened souls to deliver the fallen ones. And Vidura came for that reason. But talks of spiritual enlightenment are so refreshing that while instructing Dhritarashtra, Vidura attracted the attention of all the members of the family, and all of them took pleasure in hearing him patiently. This is the way of spiritual realization. The message should be heard attentively, and if spoken by a realized soul, it will act on the dormant heart of the conditioned soul. And by continuously hearing, one can attain the perfect stage of self-realization. So all the members of the palace had gathered around to hear the enlightening words of Vidura. So there are three verses that are like a pause in the action of the narration here. As long as Vidura played the part of a sudra, being cursed by Manduka Muni, Aryama officiated at the post of Yamaraj to punish those who committed sinful acts. So someone took his position. So that's also instructive because we think if I surrender to Krishna, if I go and preach, who will do this and who will do that and who will do that? Well, somehow or another, the world doesn't collapse. If we surrender to Krishna, the world somehow or another goes on. After all, we're going to die one day and the world will go on. That's one sort of pause verse. Having won his kingdom and observed the birth of one grandson competent to continue the noble tradition of his family, Maharaj Yudhisthira reigned peacefully and enjoyed uncommon opulence in cooperation with his younger brothers, who were all expert administrators to the common people. So who is that grandson? Yes, so that we heard about that. We didn't hear about it in the last chapter, but it was there in chapter 12. Maharaj Prickett was born and was already predicted that he was going to be a great soul, a great ruler. So Maharaj Yudhisthira could relax. The descendants, when the heir apparent, after he would die. Yes. The prince, yes, he was there. The Rajkumar was there. But he saw amidst this happiness that was there after so much intention had been there to gain the kingdom, there was something else going on. Because there is, no matter how successful we are, there is always something else going on. And what is that something else that's going on? When we're just born, it's going on. When we're in the prime of our youth, it's going on. When we're healthy, it's going on. And when our eyesight is failing and our teeth are falling out, it's also going on. And what is that? Time is moving, and Vidura knew that. Therefore, even though the instructions that he was going to give were especially meant for Dhritarashtra, they were relevant for everyone, including Yudhisthira Maharaj, including Arjun, including Kunti Devi, including Draupadi. Everyone, including each and every one of us, whether our teeth happen to be falling out like mine and some other members of our audience over here. I'll show you mine if you show me yours after, okay? or we're very, very young. This one over here. So he said, so Sutta Goswami says, insurmountable eternal time, imperceptibly, and that is time's trick, so gradual, day by day, that change, the dwindling, is imperceptible, practically speaking. We don't notice it. It overcomes those who are too much attached to family affairs and always engrossed in their thoughts. Distracted about what is really going on in the material level. I have so many duties to do this and this and this and this and this, and here comes this issue, and what side am I on this issue? These people are really wrong, and these people are really right. Yes, yes. And then the issue changes, and then these people, which side, what do I really think? And then maintaining this and this and that. On and on and on. Maya's business is to distract us as time imperceptibly steals away every moment of our life. And Maya does this by engrossing us. So therefore, Vidura, out of his kindness, is going to speak. Now, in the last chapters, in chapters 7 through 11, we've heard Sutta Goswami speak very sweetly about Krishna, how intimately he deals and protects his devotees. He protects them even from their family quarrels, like when Aswatthama, the difference of opinion, had to deal with Aswatthama. He protects their lives. So sweet! How the queens loved him so much. So sweet. How Krishna entered Dwarka and the residents greeted him and the city was decked so sweetly and auspiciously. Fragrance everywhere, birds, peacocks, this bird, sounds, conch shells, everything sweet. But these words we're going to hear now are very bitter. But bitter medicine is very healthy. Vidura is going to speak very strongly, because saru means cut. In the speaking of the truth, the saru, his words, have to cut. Cut through what? When you talk about cutting, it's cutting through something. Cutting through what? Illusion, attachment, huh? Layers and layers. Oh, attachments. If we listed all the material things we're attached to, at least I can speak for myself, the class would even go on five times as long. What to speak of much longer than it's supposed to go on? So the sadhu, with a very sharp knife of his words, cuts But it is a surgical cutting that is meant for the good of the patient. It is done with pretty affection. So Vidura said, "My dear king," he calls him king, "Rajan, Rajan Nigam Yatam Sigram," my dear king. Dhritarashtra was not the king, an illusion. He was thinking, "I'm the senior king, everyone is listening to me." But he was not at all the king. Vidura is being sarcastic. Prabhupada explains this. He's being sarcastic because sarcasm is such a heavy weapon. He's going to use it again and again. "My dear king, please," he doesn't waste a moment, "please get out of here immediately. Do not delay. Just see how fear has overtaken you. You're staying here. Who will take care of me? Otherwise I'll die." Prabhupada's purport gets to the point. Cruel death cares for no one, for none, be he Dhritarashtra or even Maharaj Yudhisthira. So by staying comfortably in the palace, you'll be protected from death. Therefore, spiritual instructions, as was given to old Dhritarashtra, was equally applicable to younger Maharaj Yudhisthira. As a matter of fact, everyone in the royal palace, including the king and his brothers and mother, was raptly attending the lectures. But it was known to Vidura that his instructions were especially meant for Dhritarashtra. Vidura, towards the end, Prabhupada explains in the purport that everyone is thinking of themselves king, king of something or another. And this is Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Jan Iha, trying to enjoy Prakriti. I am Purusha, I am the master, I am the Lord, and Prakriti, something is my domain. Everyone has a kingdom, and according to their power, their potency, we chalk out our kingdom, how much we're going to control and enjoy. And a big person has a big kingdom, a country. And a little person, like some silly dog, he chalks out his kingdom of his territory. And dare any person enter in his territory, then immediately, ruff, ruff, ruff. This is, you've dared to enter my kingdom. This is my enjoyable sphere. So everyone in this world is thinking like that. False kingship. And Vidura asked him to get out immediately if he wanted to be saved from the fearful situation was approaching him fast. Look at that. It's in the grammatically, the sentence is in the conditional. That means get out immediately. But what's the next word? Not just get out immediately, but what's the next word? What's the next word? Just look. Whoops. No, not in the... If, yes. If. You don't have to get out immediately if you don't want, if you don't want to avoid the fearful situation, if you don't want to avoid a horrible death, then you don't have to leave. But if you do wish to avoid a horrible death based on your own foolishness and ignorance, then get out immediately. He did not ask Maharaj Yudhisthira in that way because he knew that a king like Maharaj Yudhisthira is aware of all the fearful situations of this flimsy world and would take care of himself in due course, even though Vidura might not be present at that time. So that's actually what happens in the 16th chapter, not 16th, but 15th chapter, entitled "The Pandavas Retire Timely." But Vidura was remaining with such a thick covering of illusion. So death was approaching. I think I'm going to stop here because you've all been going long, strong for so long. If there's no pressing questions, I'll try my best to go. and trample the earth. That's said. And also said that there was some of them, I think one of the acharyas have said that some of the Yadus weren't actually great devotees, that they thought themselves equal to Krishna and they would cause so much trouble. Just look in the 11th canto and you'll see. You can know what is said from there. But remember also that we extract philosophy from the Leela, the pastimes. And that's very important to do that. But ultimately, the Leela is the ultimate thing, not the philosophy. The Leela, Krishna's, it was time for him to move to another universe. He had other, his time was finished here. It was time for him to move. He comes once a day of Brahma. He visits the earth. Did everyone hear that? Our Dadu said that to do some justice to Mahaprabhu, when he left us, leaving us in tears, he went to give his mercy to others. There were countless others awaiting his mercy. So he had his duty also to be merciful to them. I'm not able to repeat it as sweetly as you spoke it. I'm sorry. But that was the basic idea, roughly spoken. So similarly, when Krishna leaves, he leaves not mercilessly, although he leaves so many individuals crying, like Bhumi Devi, had different personalities, like even the queens of Dwarka. We heard how Krishna would come in and out of their association for so many years while he was on the planet, but the earth was feeling Krishna's presence continuously, the touch of his lotus feet for 125 years. And then all of a sudden, she was bereft. So this will be explained in chapter 16. So she was so heartbroken. Because as soon as Yudhisthira finds out that Krishna has left the planet, he immediately acts. He renounces the kingdom, and he knows his time is finished. His part in the drama, in the pastimes upon this earth is now over, and it's time for him to leave. So it wasn't yet time for that to occur. So Krishna didn't allow him to know. If Krishna wanted him to know, yes, because he's such a great devotee, he would know. But it wasn't yet time for Yudhisthira to do that, and it will come. Yudhisthira finds out exactly at the right time, which is what happens when we're meant to find out things and know things and get particular things. It happens just at the right time by Krishna's arrangement. And there's a verse that describes this by Narada Muni that we'll hear, not today though. Therefore, the instruction described in this verse cannot be applied to Maharaj Yudhisthira or his brothers and mothers. It is meant for persons like Dhritarashtra. Yes, so you're pointing out that in one purport, Prabhupada says it was good for you to steer, and the other one, not required for you to steer. And he was an eternal associate. And yet he was listening, because first of all, he was playing the part of a king, and therefore second of all, he was attracted to hear this katha because it's pure and spoken. And third, to set the example that everyone has to hear this. One may be an exalted devotee or whatever. Everyone should hear this because we need to be the very nature of the material world that tends to cover us and make us forget. What is that called? Samasa Vairagya, the crematorium, Yes, that everyone, you go to, you've been to the ghat, the burning ghat, and immediately you become detached, renounced sannyasi. But 2 hours later, you forget everything. This is the very nature of the material world. The material world engages us. We don't like it, but it engages us in activities of the material world. It forces us to pay attention to the material world, and it tends to cover us. In the role of a king, but not as an eternal associate. In the purport it says that? Something that's not 100% accurate. But did you know that? That the demigods. No. Huh? Yes. Yeah. There we go. There's the answer. Is that all right? That not directly, certainly not directly by him, but indirectly. Huh? That he himself gave. This is the easiest way, so you don't have to trouble your mind about it anymore. But yeah, you know what had happened, yes? Huh? So you know that who they were born and how they were born, yes? Yeah. So now you don't have to worry about it anymore. Now, instead of getting involved in that issue, you can think about Krishna and what wonderful service one day you will do.